I don't think we played well enough to win today. We had our opportunities, made too many mistakes, three fumbles in the first half, lost two. We had too many penalties, weren't good in the red zone on defense today. And then, obviously we can't get the fourth down play to win the game. So got to get back to work. We had a good week of practice. We just didn't play well enough, I don't think.
And we will dive right into our pie chart of blame for what I think yesterday on Ventline, I think we called it the Falcons game was the worst loss of the season just because they were the Falcons. This is probably the most devastating loss of the season considering what the Vikings had built the last few weeks. So we'll do a pie chart of blame. We do have not only some Viking silver linings, but some NFC North division related silver linings that we will get to as well. But let's first talk about Federated Insurance. Federated, been helping business owners for over 100 years in the Twin Cities. They're also a proud supporter of University of Minnesota Athletics. And if you're looking for weekend silver linings, the Gophers, baby. I don't care that there is one of the most egregious phantom pass interference calls in the history of football. We will take it. Federated, supporting Gophers Athletics, also supporting Minnesota United here on Score North, and supporting business owners with all kinds of relevant content on their Twitter account, at FederatedINS. If you want to form a partnership, go to federatedinsurance.com where you can find out even more information. And remember, at Federated Insurance, it's always our business to protect yours.
TCL is a proud sponsor of the Score North Studios. Enjoy more of the things you love with TCL. These two guys have Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
Dallas trailing by four. Uh-oh, Lamb went in motion. Dalton looking in, so he throws. Touchdown! Wide open is the tight end, Dalton Schultz. The Cowboys take the lead.
There's still a lot of football to be played. We got to bounce back quickly and get back on track. But, there are positives to point to. But ultimately, when you don't win, you leave the stadium just feeling sick to your stomach.
Yeah, I think that probably sums it up. Let's put the action movie rewind treatment here before we get to pie chart of blame. Let's put the action movie rewind treatment on this game yesterday. Gentlemen, what was your main takeaway from the Vikings losing to the Dallas Cowboys? I'm just curious before we get into the pie chart.
That the Vikings had the exact Zim formula to win. Like it was, if he could have scripted it out on Saturday night, the script of what I need, he got it. Unfortunately for Mike, his defense is not good enough ultimately in 2020 to hold up its end of the bargain. So my takeaway was flawed or not, and I do believe that the concept is flawed, but Zimmer got exactly what he wanted from his team as far as the circumstances to create the environment for victory and ultimately a defense that for a long time does not give up a lead, not once, but twice in the final quarter. And I'm talking about probably for like 5 years, right? Like you take that lead early in the fourth quarter, it's lockdown. It's probably done. It's at home too. The defense could not hold up what it was designed and supposed to do, which is a flaw, but that's my takeaway.
Yeah. What about you, Dex?
Missed opportunity. Just an insane missed opportunity. If you would have won this game, you're a game back of the seventh seed. The Packers lost. You would have been two games back of the NFC North lead. Yeah. Just an insane missed opportunity, man. You had it in your clutches, and you lost to Andy Dalton and the Cowboys. So missed opportunity.
I think my main takeaway is that it's sort of what Judd was saying, but the Vikings' approach to winning games doesn't leave them with enough room for error. And even if their defense is awesome, it leaves them very little room for error because they can't really be trailing late in games. Because opposing teams know that they won't run the football. Dalvin Cook is basically eliminated from the equation late in games. And it just makes it a lot easier to play defense. You might wonder, well, how do the Vikings look like that offensively the whole game? And then all of a sudden, because the opposing team knows that the best player won't touch the ball. So let's get into the pie chart here. Pie chart of blame. Mackie and Judd, where we dissect the damage.
Now on Mackie and Judd.
This chart makes it as clear as I can to you.
The pie chart of blame.
You want to blame somebody?
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
All right, Judd, lead us off.
All right. I'm going to start with the smallest amounts of pie and work my way up. Okay. And I've got one, two, three. I've got six pieces of pie.
Is that what you usually do for Thanksgiving pie?
Six
too?
Pieces of pie.
Do you do small, then bigger, or bigger, then small?
No, I go too big, too quick.
Actually, you know what you might want to do
too
here?
Too big, too quick. You're right.
In the spirit of Thanksgiving week, since you want to serve up so much pie, what if you had two pies? I mean, is it worth carving up two pies
you
for
what
we saw late in that game yesterday?
Every year this week, I make the same mistake, too. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I try and not eat much, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm like, by Thursday, I'm going to be starving. It's going to be great. Thursday, I'll run downstairs and start on the hors d'oeuvres. And by the time the turkey served, I'm stuffed.
Wait, when you run downstairs on Thursday, are there just hors d'oeuvres on the table?
Has Dawn, some
Dawn's been up for like 6 hours.
Oh, she's starting on the turkey to go plan tonight. The bird was in the sink on Saturday.
Oh, my God.
The bird's in the fridge right now. Tonight she starts. Right, Declan, it's turkey to go.
Declan and I are going to swing by your driveway and just get a little curbside Thanksgiving meal.
Dawn has turkey to go down, and it changes your life.
Yeah.
Because turkey's, it's not great. It's fine. Yeah. But turkey to go.
100%. You know, it's funny. So my mom made turkey to go sandwiches for 20 years.
Oh, they're so good.
And left the recipe. Haven't dabbled in it, but left the seasoning she puts on it and everything.
Oh, yeah. No, that's key. That's key.
So I'm just saying that the option for creating a second pie here, there was so much off yesterday's game. It is Thanksgiving week, so.
Oh, I mean, I could create 2 3-piece pies, too. You know what? Think of this however you want, okay? It's up to you. I start with a 5% chunk of pie that goes to, unfortunately, my guy, because I still think he's fantastic. He caught the, 39-yard touchdown pass yesterday, Justin Jefferson. Because on second down on that last Vikings drive, you've got to catch that ball. I mean, it was a crossing route. He had yards and yards, possibly. And he basically thought about how much he was going to gain before he secured the football. I think this is the first mistake I've seen him make where it was just obvious so far in 2020. But 5%, because if that pass gets caught, it changes that last drive completely, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, keep going, because I think we're all going to touch on some of these, but Kirk Cousins can't beat you with his legs in that situation. Kirk Cousins isn't going to get perfect offensive line protection. So he has less of an opportunity to beat you in that spot than Russell Wilson does or Pat Mahomes, right?
He is not Pat Mahomes.
So yes, when you throw a perfect pass over the middle to your most mobile explosive receiver and he drops it, it lets a lot of air out of the balloon for Kirk in that spot.
Exactly right. A 5% also goes to a key factor here. Vikings discipline. And this is sort of on coaching too. And we can complain about the refereeing all we want, but 8 penalties is too much. The Cowboys scored 9 points off the Cousins and Cook fumbles. So 5% goes to discipline or a lack thereof. And to Dex's point, missed opportunity is also rooted in the fact that you were lacking that discipline. 15%, now it gets fun because it goes to a couple players here. 15% goes to Chris Boyd.
Mm. Wow.
A fake punt that is about to get you a first down. And you talk about things that change momentum in games, right? Like swing things. Fourth down, you're going to punt. Chris Boyd, the Vikings run to near perfection, idealistically wise. They run the perfect fake punt. Colquitt throws a fine pass. Chris Boyd's got the first down and more. The Vikings are about to come back on the field. Everything is coming up purple. And then you go back and watch the replay, and Chris Boyd at the line of scrimmage before the punt is basically hyperventilating to let Colquitt, who, by the way, was in on the play. They practiced it. No, I'm open.
My guess is it's a look that, so everyone, they're going to punt, right?
Yeah.
And then they get a look, and everyone has to sort of know when that look pops up. And so maybe Chris Boyd's thinking, am I the only one that sees the look? Oh, my God.
But this
Who else sees the look?
This is third grade recess at St. Therese for me, right? I'm open, Johnny. I'm open. I'm going to be open.
Or like Judd on the playground. Someone tells you, you can't tell anybody else about this. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you run inside and tell the rest of the class, right?
Yeah.
And then Chris Boyd on the subsequent punt, because they have to punt, hits a guy from behind to take a 15-yard penalty that gives the Cowboys the ball at their own 48 for starting position. And, of course, the Cowboys go down and score. And that makes the score 13-7. So you go from momentum-changing fake punt. And, by the way, the fake punt is now gone. Everybody now expects it. So you ran, you shot your shot.
It worked.
And it's got 50% Chris Boyd.
Yeah.
20%. So Chris Boyd made mistakes, right? Like, these are mistakes. And people make mistakes. Like, it's frustrating and it shouldn't happen, but they make mistakes.
Actually, you missed one of the Chris Boyd dropped a game-winning interception.
Oh, that's another one, yeah. You're right.
And it was an Andy Dalton.
I should have given him more.
Andy Dalton was throwing a slant route. I can't remember who the receiver was. And the receiver cut off the route. There was just some miscommunication. And now, in fairness, Chris Boyd was watching the route, and then, like, as he's turning, the ball is hitting him in the chest between the numbers.
It's a tough play.
So
right.
It wasn't like he was tracking it the whole time and dropped it. But it is worth noting, he could have ended the game if he catches that ball.
So 15% Chris Boyd, and Chris Boyd made mistakes, but they're mistakes. Lack of effort is not a mistake. 20% goes to Chris Boyd's fellow rotating left cornerback, Chris Jones.
Oh my God.
The Pollard 42-yard touchdown run, I'm going to say this right now, and I don't think I'm going out on a limb here. Zimmer took over this team in 2014, okay? And, like, his defenses have been, for a long time, pretty damn stout. Like, they've had bad games, I get that. But the philosophy of his defense is pretty, pretty sound. I would say this is top five and maybe top three missed tackles of all time by a Viking under Zimmer. I mean, it's that bad. The Pollard run, 42 yards, and the Star Tribune has a great picture of Chris Jones basically watching Pollard run by him without anything besides, hold on, I'm going to put my, missed you.
Like, the obvious explanation is that he just didn't want to make a hit, right? Like, the obvious explanation
is... Yeah, that's a simple one.
He made a business decision, even though he has no job security. I don't know how they haven't cut him yet. We're recording this on a Monday morning. It's been... Okay.
Well, they might have. We wouldn't know yet.
And I think if you're looking for a secondary explanation, I have been trying to put myself in his shoes. Like, what is the... There's no way that he just backed out of making a tackle on that spot, right? But what is the other explanation? What other explanation would there be to not put your shoulder pad in that running back's hip? It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, he looks legitimately like he's caught by surprise, but why are you caught by surprise? Like, were you told a pass was coming? I don't know. I can't explain it.
Like, the only other thing I can think of is, but it was like, I know. Pollard was in the second level. So the only thing you can think of is, did he think it was a play action and, he doesn't have the ball? But why would he still be, like, pretending to not have the ball
that
far down the field?
It's like he's frozen in time.
It's so weird.
And it's just bizarre. All right, so 20% Chris Jones, because that was just pathetic.
Yeah.
25%? Speaking of guys who might not be employed by Tuesday, 25% Marwin Maloof special teams. Third consecutive game in which, let's see. So against Detroit, two block punts. That's bad. Against Chicago, I believe two long punt returns. Cordell Patterson's 104-yard return for a kickoff, touchdown, bad snap by Cutting that cost the Vikings an extra point, which could have absolutely cost them the entire game. To the point yesterday where Zim created long snapper controversy by having Cutting inactive and a guy they just signed off the street who hasn't played since 2018. He did the snapping.
Power move, dude. I love the power move.
I figured this out, boys. Zimmer, and he might be right here, loves to take Spielman's special team draft picks and deactivate them.
And cut them. I think the one thing he hates, Zimmer is not a very patient man. Right, nope. He's gained more patience.
The understatement of the Mackey and Judd show of all time. You just made it.
He's gained more patience over the 7 years as head coach, but I guarantee you, he's at practice every single day, and he's looking at just how complicated and nuanced cornerbacks' jobs are, and just how much you have to think about and process and do and internalize, and the same for almost every other position, right? Offensive linemen, like he's a little bit more patient with guys like Elfline and guys like Samia because, God, there's just a lot going on. You're trying to figure out, are they stunting? Is there a blitz? Like, you're trying to get your footwork right. And then he looks at the special teams guys, and they're sitting over there for 2 hours in practice, basically just kicking field goals and punting to each
other. Side field, baby. They're on a side field. They're on their own.
And I am not saying that any of us could go into an NFL game and long snap a football with any sort of ability. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But if you're looking at a head coach who's not patient, who's trying to mold all these complicated things, and then he looks over, and Austin Cutting's only job is to long snap. That is your only job.
Yep.
And he can't, and he's rolling ground balls back. In Mike Zimmer's mind, it's like, dude, you're cut, or you're on the bench this week. You're deactivated.
Jeff Locke, Blair Walsh, Daniel Carlson, and now cutting. Yeah. These are all guys, because you know what, Mike? Mike is bound and determined to teach Rick, just take a damn cornerback with that draft pick.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
And special teams. So on Sunday, muffed punt, botched trick play, subsequent Chris Boyd penalty. And then don't forget, too, it was a CeeDee Lamb 20-yard return of a punt that put Dallas at its own 39 to start the winning drive. 25% special teams. And that leaves a 30% piece of pie for the unit that deserves it. The Vikings defense. 180 yards against on the ground, which I looked this up this morning. It looks like it's about top eight in the all-time opponents' rushing yards against for a Vikings team since Mike got the job in 2014. The defense struggled at times against Andy Dalton. Dak Prescott, I'd be like, oh, okay, I sort of get that. Andy Dalton.
Dalton.
But I put 30% of the pie on them. But I get it, too. Like, they're just not that good. They've got Kendricks is great. They've certainly got some good players. But your interior defensive line is going to be consistently, right now, a weakness. Your cornerbacks are going to be at times, too. So I'm not, like, saying, oh, my God, I can't believe this. But back to the top of the show for me. They are incapable of holding up the end of the bargain that Zimmer needs them to. So ultimately, 30% goes to defense, 25% special teams. Chris Jones gets 20% because you got to be able to tackle when you're playing the National Football League. Chris Boyd, 15%. Justin Jefferson, 5%. And Vikings discipline, 5%. That is 100%, six pieces of pie.
That's a Thanksgiving week.
The Rock knows how you feel.
Now I'm going to go take a nap.
Yep. All right. This is what's amazing. I thought, as you're going through your pie chart, I was like, man, Judd and I basically have like pretty similar pie charts. And then you got to the end of yours. I just want to preview that I gave 75% to something that you did not give any pie to.
Nice. See, this is why the pie charts are great. You're bringing a different pie.
You are coming over late.
I just ate, and now I'm going to go take a nap. And then you're going to show up and knock on the door. For a second meal.
I'm still envisioning Judd Zulgad waking up in the morning. Like, your Christmas morning is turkey to go Thanksgiving. The wife's been slaving away for like, she's been up since 2 in the morning just slaving away.
4 days. This is 3 days of prep. Judd.
You and Stella just running down the stairs.
I'm telling you
the same pajamas.
Yes.
I'm telling you right now, I was very excited Saturday when I saw the turkey in the sink. The bird in the sink, that's the start of the process of de-thawing.
You know, I think so. We've made the decision. My wife and I are not going to see family. Our family's kind of scattered throughout the country and stuff.
We're doing the same, yeah.
And so we're going to support a local restaurant. I see all these awesome menus coming out saying, like, if you get your order in by Monday or Tuesday, like, Nico's Tacos has a Thanksgiving menu in Uptown. Like,
love it.
Yes, injected into my veins. Anyways. Pie chart of blame here.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
All right, 5% special teams lifetime achievement award. All right, I'm not just rewarding the special teams for their incompetence yesterday. You know, the muffed punt by Osborne, the 20-yard punt return, the illegal motion penalty that we covered in your pie chart. Chris Boyd with the illegal block in the back as a gunner. Like, what are you doing? All of this comes off the heels of multiple blocked punts against the Lions, ground ball snaps by the long snapper, other gaffes, etc. So just 5% for a month's worth of brilliant incompetence by the Vikings special teams. 10% Justin Jefferson for dropping the crossing route pass late in the game. I'll say it again. I mean, Kirk Cousins was excellent in that game yesterday.
Yep.
And it might have been the best game he's ever played as a Viking. And he's sitting there with less than 2 minutes to go, one timeout. You got to score a field goal to keep the game going, a touchdown. And his tools in that spot are not as plentiful as a Russell Wilson, a Kyler Murray, because he can't just, like, abort mission on a pass and run the ball for 15 yards. He has to throw the ball down the field 7 or 8 times to get the Vikings where they need to be. And so if you drop passes on crossing routes like that, you're basically just, like, eliminating all chance of converting a first down and moving the chain.
And that's what, if he catches that ball, 20 yards, you think?
It's at least a first down.
There was a lot. There was room there.
I think it's a first down at the very least.
It looked like the Cowboys were playing. I mean, they were playing soft coverage and allowing underneath stuff.
I think he gets about 20 yards.
Does he break a tackle or something? It depends. But obviously, like, when he drops that pass, you're thinking, oh, my God.
I think that they tie the game on a field goal if he catches that ball.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And then it depends on basically who wins the coin flip in overtime. 10% to Chris Jones' business decision on the 42-yard touchdown run. And I just tweeted the question here. Have the Vikings cut him yet? Are we on hour-by-hour watch? How can you, honest to God, like he's just kind of a replacement level player, right? I know that they're short on cornerbacks.
Very much so.
But how can you watch that film? Unless there's some other explanation we don't know about. The guy had a dislocated, like the guy had a broken clavicle and just couldn't make the hit or something, right? If there's no explanation for it, you have to cut him. You can't set the bar in that room with those players, those young cornerbacks, that's what you do on that play. Like, you have to throw your body in front of that running back.
He was a lion, okay? Like, so, yeah, if you cut him, you're not going to be, oh, my God, I can't believe you cut Chris Jones in 2020, and now he's a Pro Bowl player. I think you're fine cutting him. He was with Detroit before.
When it comes to business decisions in football, usually the guys that make business decisions are the ones that have business to protect. Like, you've got job security. You've got major earning potential on the horizon. You've got endorsement deals. He makes like league minimum.
He looked like He looked like his contract reads, you are paid to cover guys in passing situations.
I guess.
I'm not paid to stop the run. Okay, thank you.
So 5% special teams, 10% Justin Jefferson, 10% Chris Jones, 75% of my pie chart of blame goes to the Vikings' inability to function offensively in the final 2 minutes. And I know this is going to ruffle some feathers because the defense gave away multiple fourth quarter leads. It was back and forth. The defense couldn't hold serve like we've seen for the last 6-7 years under Mike Zimmer.
Yep.
And all those things are true. The defense gave up the go-ahead touchdown. Nothing about the defensive performance is worth praising in the fourth quarter, okay?
Yep.
But this is how the NFL works. The NFL is a back and forth league. Yesterday alone, all right? Yesterday alone in the NFL.
Yep.
8 games came down to the final possession in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And some of the quarterbacks pulled it off. And I shouldn't even say quarterbacks. So whenever we put this stuff on Kirk Cousins, it's like, so forget about the Cousins was great yesterday. And Justin Jefferson dropped a pass. So let's just focus on Vikings offensively. Kirk is a part of this. Not yesterday as much. But there have been 148 fourth quarter comebacks in the NFL regular season over the past 3 years. 168. The Vikings have one of them.
And that was,
are you bleeping kidding me?
The Broncos, right?
It was the Broncos game.
Which is a terrible team.
Yep.
Yeah.
And now they came back and they tied the Packers in the fourth quarter in 2018. And so that counts as a fourth quarter comeback, but they didn't win the game. So I'm not counting it because the win matters.
Sure.
And so, again, like, games go back and forth in the NFL. Many are, if not most, yesterday, most games are decided inside 2 minutes. And you're sitting there. I don't care if it's if the game flow was a 10-7 defensive grind game or if it was a 35-31 shootout. Tons of games come down to the two-minute drill. And the Vikings offense is the most incompetent two-minute drill offense in the NFL the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Period.
But that's how they're built. Like, that's on Spielman, Zimmer. That's on the people that make the decisions. Like, they were yesterday's game. Here's the scary thing. It had almost every element of what they want. This is what they want. Like, they have constructed their team to be very successful and possibly win championships in 1992. That's how they're constructed. So, like, let's not blame Kirk. They are built to do what they did. The only thing, they're basically built not to be trailing late because the construction is our defense won't allow that, which they're not good enough defensively to do now. But this is the problem, and it goes beyond Kirk. This is a front office philosophical decision of how they're going to operate, and it's a really intriguing thing. But unfortunately for them in 2020, it don't work.
I mean, what you just said, think about it. And I'm not shooting the messenger here that the Vikings aren't built to trail late.
Correct.
But think about how many games you're trying to bend reality to what you want it to be.
Yes.
It's not possible. I don't care how you're built. I don't care if you're built like the Vikings, if you're built like the Chiefs, you're going to trail late. And if you don't have a way to win some of those games, I'm not even asking you to win all of them.
Yeah.
You've won one of them in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
And also worth noting, this is the, in terms of like, you know, the ability to move the ball offensively, we are in the midst, in part because of the pandemic and lack of offseason workouts, in part because of just offensive rules, you know, rules favoring offenses. We are in the midst of the highest scoring and highest yardage season in NFL history. It is easier to move the ball in those situations than it ever has been in the history of football. And the Vikings are still completely incapable of crossing the 50-yard line in most of these situations. And and yesterday, Kirk Cousins was not really part of that problem. I mean, like, would it have been nice if he could run for a first down or something on fourth? Yes.
Right.
But he has been part of the problem in a lot of these because of his just, like, inability to lead and focus in these situations.
This is what you just went through is not going to change until you have a different coach.
And maybe a different general manager.
And that does not make him a bad coach. But if you're telling me...
I mean, it's a huge blind spot.
If you're telling me that you want a team, I mean, it sounds so silly, but that can take a 2-minute drive and be successful and be built that way, you would need a new coaching staff.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like when the Vikings are trailing like halfway through the fourth quarter and there's only one or two possessions left and the Vikings are trailing, the game is over. And that's not just me like giving a hot take. Statistically and factually, the game is over. The last 3 years, they have won. So 75% to the Vikings' inability to move the ball offensively in the 2-minute drill. Declan?
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
Honestly, a tough pie chart because, yes, Chris Boyd had a bad game. Some guy named Chris Jones also had a very bad game. I had to look up who number 28 Jones was in the first series of the game because I had no idea who he was up until the first quarter of yesterday. But I had a tough time putting blame on specific players for this one. I think this was a communal team effort. So I have three chunks of pie, but 70% of this pie is going to the lack of clutch execution. So you had the last drive. Where all you have to do is just get in field goal range, right?
Mm-hmm.
You also have a drive before them, before the Cowboys happen, where you could ice the game right there too, the second to last offensive series the Vikings had. Adam Thielen is just complaining and being on the sidelines, just beside himself that there's no flag. I know we all love Adam Thielen in this town, but for God's sakes, Adam, calm down. It's the National Football League, not the National Thielen League. I need you to relax, dude. He gets so bent out of shape over the smallest things that happen in football, man. You're covered. That's what happens. It really bugs me because he always has been like this.
Be careful.
And people,
be careful.
He is like a
fans get
one
very
mad.
He's from here.
I did this same rant 2 years ago and got an incredible amount of crap because people are like, don't pick on Thielen. His moaning and whining drives me crazy.
It is a thing here. Like Carl Anthony Towns does the same thing with the Timberwolves. Like, let's just be able to overcome some adversity here, boys.
No kidding. So those two offensive drives could have iced the game. You didn't. Just Jefferson has that bad drop on second down. 70% for lack of clutch execution. 15% for the lack of pass rush against Andy bleeping Dalton. Okay, so according to ESPN stats and info, the Vikings pressured Andy Dalton on only 4 of 34 dropbacks yesterday.
PFF has 6 pressures, 4 hurry, so basically the same.
If you don't pressure Andy Dalton, like I know we all think Andy Dalton is basically a bum, he's a backup quarterback right now, but if you give him time to throw, guess what? He's going to find the throws. Pressure him.
And I'll tell you what, the one sack, so Jaleel Johnson had the one sack, that was a coverage sack. Andy Dalton was back there for a half hour, and Jaleel Johnson just like bumped into him.
Yeah, he like got his arm on him, and that was it.
Yeah.
So 15% for the lack of pass rush. And then the final 15%, my third piece of pie, is you beat yourselves. So 8 penalties for 80 yards. You outpossessed Dallas. You outgained Dallas. You had the recipe for 30 Dalvin touches. You found Adam Thielen for 2 touchdowns. Justin Jefferson had another big catch and another decent game. You literally beat yourselves.
2 fumbles, too.
And turnovers. So if you look at the box score, you take away the score, you'd probably think the Vikings win this game. But the penalties killed you. The lack of clutch execution killed you. You let Andy Dalton sit in the pocket and basically fillet your defense. And some of that was missed tackles. I get that. But you beat yourself. So my pie chart goes 70% for lack of clutch execution, 15% for the lack of pass rush, and 15% for beating yourselves.
The Rock knows how you feel about pie.
Great stuff. That was very therapeutic. I think yesterday was a very therapeutic episode of Vikings Ventline, too. So if you haven't yet checked that out, Purple Daily Podcast Feed, Apple, Spotify, ScoreNorth.com. You can also just go to ScoreNorth.com and find all of our videos, all of our podcasts, et cetera, et cetera.
Just when you got sucked back in, just when you were thinking to yourself, oh, wow, this is impressive. Post by three wins. I'm back.
It's like when she, you know, she tells you now she wants to commit and now she pulls the rug underneath you.
You know what? The Vikings and I are
never happened to me.
So. The Vikings and I are just friends, okay?
Okay.
We're just friends.
Gotcha.
Well, while we sit here and try to figure out what to do with our tormented Vikings relationship, the one thing that really does make all of us feel better is when the Packers lose hilariously and their fans melt down on post-game call-in shows. This is Packer Vent Line, courtesy of our friends on the Green and Gold post-game show on The Fan in Milwaukee.
Go, Pack, go!
The Packers are not trying to win a Super Bowl. They don't care about that. Their goal is to be good and sustain goodness, if you will. Last year, they got to the NFC Championship game. They lost four games. In those four games, they gave up 732 rushing yards. In the NFC Championship game, they gave up 285 rushing yards. So you'd think you don't have to be the smartest person in the room to know, oh, what do we got to do? We got to address run defense. But they don't, because they don't care about being great.
Go, Pack, go!
That's true. That was such an... So they were up by 14 points at the half yesterday on the Colts. But the Colts are one of those teams, even if they get off to a bad start defensively, they're kind of a punch-you-in-the-mouth defensive team.
Yeah, they are good defensively.
The Packers hate getting punched, and they got punched.
Well, and the quarterback really hates being punched.
He does.
He doesn't take it well.
Go, Pack, go!
Why are the Packers such a soft and complacent organization? Our special teams have been bad for a decade, whether it's Sean Slocum, Ron Zook, had to be about the worst ever. Now we've got a punt block this year, a punt return. Well, and Gary, going back to your point before the break about why players don't come here, I remember Darrell Revis saying he was shocked Green Bay never called him. And that was what we did under Ted, and obviously Nudy's done a little bit more, but we like our guys. We're complacent.
Go, Pack, go!
Did I hear that guy just complain about special teams problems? You want special teams problems? You want special teams problems?
Go, Pack, go!
This loss is more to me on Rodgers, if you ask me, because he's the guy. And for him to not make decisions like that down the stretch, where he's supposed to be the man with ice in the veins, it's kind of troubling to me.
Go, Pack, go!
That's hilarious. You know, honestly, Packer Vent Line would be even more glorious if the Vikings had won that game, and now you're sitting here watching them melt down. Vikings creep within two.
Yeah, 5-5. Yeah. Second place, basically. Yeah, you're right.
We are contractually obligated when the Vikings lose to go around at least one lap around the room with silver linings. I know it doesn't feel like a silver linings kind of a day. It feels like a pile on the Vikings day, but damn it, that's what we do. When the Vikings lose, we do offer up some silver linings. So we have to at least offer up one each, a Viking silver lining, before we talk Timberwolves.
Hold on. Okay, I got one. Before he dropped the crossing route on the Vikings' final drive, the 39-yard touchdown pass, and I'm going to give credit both places here, okay? So hear me clearly, folks. I'm going to speak very clearly on this. The 39-yard touchdown pass from Kirk Cousins to Justin Jefferson was a thing of beauty, and I think a prelude to what is to come, or potentially what should be to come. That was gorgeous. And you know what? To Kirk's credit, Kirk can throw that pass. Kirk, listen to me. You can throw that pass. You're good enough. You're smart enough. You're talented enough. You can throw.
And damn it, people like you.
Well, actually, I don't know that they do. But damn it, you can make that play. I mean, gentlemen, for as good as Thielen was on Sunday, and he was, that play to me might have been the most encouraging thing, because like that play is there. And by the way, Jefferson was covered. So that was not some busted coverage. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. He's just, you know, he's wide open 39 yards down the field. Easy touchdown. That to me was incredibly encouraging as far as what we should see more of. And Kirk can throw that ball. Jefferson, while being covered, can catch it, that opens up a door to me for a play that is going to be there.
The coach has to want to run more plays like that. The coach agrees completely. The coach wants to make sure that Dalvin Cook is getting fed, which like Dalvin Cook should.
And he doesn't trust Kirk, and I get that. But that is with Diggs and now Jefferson. That's the play that Kirk can actually. That's the throw that he can make.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Dex? Silver lining.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down Jefferson too, but I'll pivot off a little bit. I'll say that Eric Kendricks, even though he's a linebacker, is making a case for Defensive Player of the Year, man. Like, it's a tough position to win Defensive Player of the Year unless you're, like, legitimately Brian Urlacher. And I feel like even the position in general never gets enough credit and love it's deserved. But the guy can cover. I mean, if the Vikings seriously have problems with corner, but just put Eric Kendricks on one of the top two receivers at this point. The dude can cover. And he's having a phenomenal year. He was an all-pro last year. Probably going to be another all-pro Pro Bowler again this year, but he's making a case for it. So I'll say that. Case for Defensive Player
that
of the Year.
That interception was just ridiculous.
And he damn near had two.
10th play of the drive for the Cowboys. It's picked off! A diving interception by Eric Kendricks! What a play! What a play!
Vilma.
Vilma and Kenny Albert experience.
Getting villainized by Vikings fans, I think mostly because people just hate anyone that was on the 2009 New Orleans Saints team. I kind of liked him. I know, Judd, you were at the game, but I thought he was great. I really enjoyed him.
He did make one comment at one point. I think it was Adam Thielen was complaining or something about defensive contact on a play, and Jonathan Vilma reacting to potential defensive contact on a Vikings offensive player predictably said, I don't know if I saw anything there. And I was like, oh, of course you didn't. Of course you didn't. Actually, one more thing off the broadcast crew here.
Okay.
I do wonder at the Albert family, so Marv Albert, Kenny Albert, at the Albert family Thanksgiving, is there a more throaty Thanksgiving conversation than with the Alberts? Yes, we talk out of our throats. Yes.
10th play of the drive for the Cowboys.
Yes, from downtown.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Here's the turkey. Yes. Mashed potatoes. Yes.
All right. Silver lining. Believe it or not, according to 538.com, the Vikings still have a 20% chance to make the playoffs.
Wow.
That's a huge. That's.
Yeah. Well,
20%.
Crazy league.
And if they win these next two games, which they should, and they will be favored in them. Teddy Bridgewater did not play yesterday, so we'll see what happens with his status this week. I'm guessing he probably wants to play.
Yep.
But if they win these next two games, that percentage creeps up. Got to keep an eye on the Arizona Cardinals, who are a couple games in front of the Vikings, but there's still a 20% chance here. Win these next two games and then see what happens against the Buccaneers.
Can I give you one from the game, like just as a fan of football? I got to see CeeDee Lamb make a touchdown catch that was spectacular. And I saw a note saying, well, Gladney's got to stop that. Okay, I propose this question. How is Jeff Gladney stopping that play?
Dude, that was an absurd
that,
catch.
That is a nuts. I mean, he's falling backwards, hauling the ball in with his free hand and securing it.
Yeah.
That was, as a football fan, that was a spectacular thing to watch.
I feel like we are in this wide receiver renaissance right now. You know, there's still some old guard guys. There's still, you know, OBJ is hurt, but there's still, you know, Antonio Brown is back and you got DeAndre Hopkins is one of the old guard guys and still playing better than almost anybody. But this 25 and under group with both the guys we saw yesterday, DK Metcalf, DJ Moore in Carolina is now up to like 900 yards receiving.
Yes.
This Terry McLaurin in Washington with no quarterback, just putting up ridiculous yards every week. We got some guys 25 and under that are really, really fun to watch.
And the catches that they make.
Yeah. It's guys that you grew up watching, unless they had, you know,
Fred
Blitnikoff with a stick 'em on their hands.
With the stick 'em. Fred Blitnikoff of Raiders fame. Yeah, you're exactly right. But, I mean, they make one-handed grabs now. You expect them.
And even Thielen, apparently Thielen had told the broadcast crew or whatever, just like, yeah, I don't think one-handed grabs are as hard as you all think that they are. And then, of course, you see the last 2 weeks, and Thielen has made two of them.
Yeah, that was a great catch, too. You're right.
So, all right, so that's our pie chart of blame for the Vikings. And, again, Purple Daily for even more in-depth breakdown in our Viking statements on this Monday and for Vikings vent line from yesterday. Quick pause, and the Timberwolves had a low-key big weekend, making three big moves.
He's an elite playmaker. You know, we have a core and a young group that will need guidance, and not for any other reason than that it takes time in this league to find your way. And having somebody of Ricky's character, having somebody of Ricky's basketball and NBA knowledge, he'll be able to help these guys along. So we're really looking forward to that. And then, you know, Jaden, you look at a guy like Anthony, what they're already able to do are things that you can't teach with their God-given abilities. Now, as we continue to work with them, we'll be able to hone some of those things in, and also develop other characteristics that they don't even know they have in their game. And that just goes back to having an elite playmaker like Ricky, having an elite point guard like D'Angelo out there, being able to help these guys and maximize them.
Ooh, Ryan Saunders talking about developing characteristics that Anthony Edwards doesn't even know he has. Anthony, you're going to be shooting only from half court. What do you mean?
That's what I just told you. You didn't even know you could do this. Yeah. So I just told you, right? You'll be shooting from half court. That's all you're going to do. Just stand there.
It's going to be great. The Wolves roster reconstruction plan that started last year, Gerson Rosas and company took over the front office and just put a construction sign out front, said, we'll be finalized at some point in 2021. And so they're definitely still going to make moves in the future, but their roster reconstruction, at least for 2020 and then into the start of the season, looks to be complete after three big moves over the weekend. The Wolves re-signed Malik Beasley to a four-year, $60 million contract extension. I believe the fourth year is a team option. Juan Hernan Gomez, 6'9", power forward, swing guy who can shoot, as we saw last season, former first-round pick with the Nuggets. He signs a contract, and then they make a trade for defensive power forward and noted team leader in the background, Ed Davis, doesn't even wind up playing a game with the Knicks. He's bounced all over the place. But I think the biggest move of these three, and the one that's getting the most attention and maybe even sideways looks, is the Malik Beasley contract, in part because he's got some legal things that are playing out right now, but also because most people look and see, wait a second, this dude was like sort of an experimental guy last year that was trying to prove himself over the course of the second half of the season after the trade. And he did enough to get a $60 million contract over 4 years. And Judd, I just want to tell people, if you start to play the math game in the NBA, like if you start to see these contracts, like how does that guy make $15 million, $20 million, and you're comparing to like football, baseball? The NBA salary cap is $109 million, and there's only 15 guys on each team. So they're all getting paid. So I think we have to move past, like, how does that guy make $15 million? Well, somebody's going to make $15 million who can shoot 40% from three. He turns 24 this week. He was one of the Wolves' best offensive players last year, and he's one of the better three-point shooters in the entire league, over 40% the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so is it a little bit of an overpay for Malik Beasley? Probably. But I don't think it, like, cripples their – they weren't going to go out. They didn't have free agency money anyways to spend. This is all money bringing their own guys back. So it doesn't, like, hamper their ability to get a third superstar in free agency. I like it. He's a good player.
So with the reconstruction of this roster largely in place now, answer me this, Phil Mackey. How does the offense work as far as the pieces of the puzzle of the players who are going to play the most fitting together?
So a lot of that remains to be seen because we don't know. We don't even know what the starting lineup is going
to
be.
I need you to recklessly speculate on my question right now. I don't need
reckless speculation.
You got the
reckless speculation.
Trade talk.
Juicy rumors. Sure. So let me take your. I want to answer it in this way.
Yeah.
Because I think it's less about like, well, what's this all going to look like? We don't even know what the starting lineup is going to be. We don't know if Anthony Edwards is going to start right away. We don't know if Rubio is coming off the bench. But we do know that the Wolves' three main objectives over the past 12 months or so are pretty clear, and they've done all they can to pour energy into these three objectives. All right. So I want to answer your question this way. Objective number one was get better shooters in here. For years and years, and we love Flip Saunders, but even Flip Saunders in his second time around, And when Sam Mitchell was the coach, the Wolves were running mostly a 2-point centric offense. And only when Gerson Rosas and company took over, did they, like, literally on their practice court, did they start putting red X's in the long 2-point areas.
Yeah.
And they're not shy about it. I mean, Anthony Edwards came out and said there was an anecdote on draft day that he and his trainer were getting set to work out for the Timberwolves brass, and the trainer had some long 2-point jump shots built into the workout. Anthony Edwards stopped the workout and said, hey, the Wolves don't take these shots.
Yes.
Let's get rid of these. And so they've just now sort of caught up to what the Rockets and the Warriors and the Suns were doing this 12 years ago with Mike D'Antoni. So run the right system that's efficient. So score inside and shoot from outside. But you got to have better shooters than they had last year to pull that off. It was a bunch of Josh Okogies and Jarrett Culvers just putting up bricks last year. So Malik Beasley, Juan Hernan Gomez, these guys can both shoot. Anthony Edwards can shoot too, but his shot selection is terrible. And the percentages, you know, bear that out at Georgia. And obviously Towns is one of the best shooters in the NBA. So get better shooters in. They did that in part after the trade deadline hit last year. That's main objective number one. Objective number two is get some veteran leadership in here so that you can help mold these young guys, just build a more mature culture behind the scenes in a more stable culture and make sure those guys can play too. It's like, remember when the Twins brought in, let's bring Jason Kubel back and we'll bring Jason Bartlett back. And
Bartlett did magic tricks. Lay off him.
It'll be great. It's like, well, those guys couldn't do anything anymore.
I'm going to disappear now. Hey, Bartlett disappeared. Yeah.
Off waivers.
You see him play left field? Yeah, that's why he disappeared.
And with Ricky Rubio, even more so Ricky Rubio than Ed Davis, because he's going to get more minutes, but Ricky Rubio and Ed Davis both check that box. They're both good. They're not going to be like the elite players on your roster, but they're both leaders behind the scenes. They're both good at what they do. Ed Davis, by all accounts, is a valuable, good, defensive-minded power forward that's going to play, you know, 10 to 20 minutes a night. And from Johnny K, Athletic, on Ed Davis, he tweeted a couple days ago, DMs and texts being flooded right now from people, players, coaches, and media, absolutely raving about Ed Davis, a very important move there for Gerson Rosas. So you got a couple guys who are in their early 30s to go along with a young roster that can actually play and help mold. And I think it's kind of like the Taj Gibson factor. I mean, until the wheels came off the Tom Thibodeau era, you need guys like that. And that's kind of what Ed Davis is going to be. And then objective number three is get a bunch of interchangeable wing type players. Give yourself flexibility with your rotations. It's not 1990 anymore where you've got a center and a forward and another forward, and a point guard that wears short shorts and throws chest passes like Marty McFly, what was his name, Scott and Teen Wolf. Like, you need interchangeable wing-type guys that are 6'4 to 6'8, 6'9, that can play two or three different positions, that can switch on pick and roll, and you can change your starting lineups, etc. So basically 80% of their roster now is guys who are between like 6'4, 6'8, 6'9, they can play two, they can play the three, they can play the four if you want to run a smaller lineup out there. And a lot of them can shoot better than maybe a year or two ago with this roster. So better shooters, veteran leadership, interchangeable wing type players. They've checked a lot of those boxes. And now we just have to see how good are some of these players. How good is Malik Beasley? How good is Towns at his best? How good can D'Lo be? How good can Anthony Edwards be? And let those guys grow within a system. So that's my answer to your question.
Does Beasley thrive off this deal, or is there a threat of complacency off this deal? Because he was in that prove it sort of, you know, and he played well at times, I thought.
Yeah.
But I'm curious about personality wise. I'm curious if this now takes it up a notch and he actually improves, or if he says, oh man, I got my deal, which we've seen lots of guys do. That's the one thing that, you know, time will tell, but I guess it's the one question I have about him, because I didn't get a read on his personality, really.
Yeah, I think so. This is an apples to oranges because the contracts were different. But when Wiggins signed the contract, I think there was major fear of complacency. And as it turned out, like, he didn't really add anything to his game after he signed the contract.
And that was the first guess, fear of complacency.
And it was, well, the carrot that you're dangling, hey, if you want this type of money, you have to turn into the team leader and all these things. Like, they gave him the carrot before he finished the race. And so there was really no incentive for him to get up at 3 a.m. like Kobe and get to the gym, right? Like, not that he's that type of guy anyways.
Right.
With Beasley, no one's expecting him to be one of their two or even three best players. That pressure is on Towns, D'Angelo Russell, and now Anthony Edwards. And I think if Beasley can come in and be, you know, and he may get, I don't think he's going to start. We'll have to see the lineups play out. But I think he's a guy that's going to play 25 to 35 minutes a night, depending on matchups and game flow. And if he can just be a scoring spark in those situations with very little pressure, I don't think you're going to see complacency. I think he's going to come in and like want to jack threes and score 20 points. He's a little bit like a more modern NBA version of Jamal Crawford in that way, where he's just a guy that could come in and maybe in 20 minutes he jacks 8 threes and scores like 24 points.
I love that guy.
And gives you a huge spark.
I love Jamal Crawford.
That's one of the best comparisons I can come up. If he can turn into like modern day, you know, diet Jamal Crawford, I would say that would be a great win for the Timberwolves.
So what is your opening night starting five right now? Do you start Ricky at the point guard?
Let me draw
and Russell at the two?
So D'Lo and Kat are for sure starting.
Yep.
I think Hernan Gomez probably starts. I think you want that. I think you want stretch bigs at the four and the five. Not a lot of defense with these first three. Kat, D'Lo, and Hernan Gomez.
No.
And then the question becomes, if you start Rubio, you're basically committing to D'Lo off the ball to start the game, which I wouldn't put it past them.
Yep.
I probably start Anthony Edwards. I mean, there's no defense in here at all whatsoever.
So where does he start, technically?
Where does Anthony Edwards start?
Towns at the five.
I don't
Hernan Gomez at the
four.
Four and
yeah, and then Edwards, and then, at the three. Edwards kind of at the three, but he can also handle the ball. And then Rubio at the one, D'Lo at the two. I don't know if I love that though. It's a great question. I don't know what the lineup's going to be, and I don't know if they know what the lineup's going to be yet. Because you can make a case that Malik Beasley should get some starting run here.
Because you got to have some defense, right? So like Ricky could end up starting because if you got to have some defense.
Here's the thing.
Or do you not care?
They aren't going to play good defense.
No, they're not. But, I mean, do you want a stabilizer or not?
Well,
stabilizer?
Here's the other thing. Karl Anthony Towns needs to become more of that stabilizer.
True.
He's got the physical attributes to do it. I don't know why it hasn't clicked as much defensively. You know, KG was great for him in his rookie year because KG was out there helping bark out the calls and just set that defensive culture.
Yeah.
And you're kind of hoping that KG could spend maybe two or three additional years with the Timberwolves of that stretch, even as a consultant, and he's just been gone. So at some point, if Towns doesn't play defense, it's tough to really maximize this team's potential.
Do they have a player either in Ricky or Davis? Do they have a player on their roster who can play enough to hold people accountable? Because that's what KG did.
Yeah, both Ricky and Ed Davis are going to be the types of guys that
Taj did too.
But Ed Davis, I don't see Ed Davis being, if he's a starting lineup guy, it's going to be for short bursts and more just
but
like to set a tone early.
At all to influence his teammates? Because
he'll play 10 to 20 minutes a night.
I think that's the thing that Towns needs, right? Like if Towns has a person who he respects, and that's the most important part of this. If Karl Anthony Towns is a guy that he respects who plays enough to carry weight, basically say, dude, you got to play defense.
Yep.
I think that makes a difference.
Yep. Setting the example. And it's funny, we've had this whole conversation and we haven't mentioned at all the first round pick from last year, which is Jarrett Culver. I don't know how much Jarrett Culver, I don't see any way he starts. I don't know how much he plays. Like, look at all these wing players the Wolves have.
Okogie plays more, right?
Okogie's another one. Like, those guys are going to get some minutes, but, you know, if I'm looking at the wing players that I am. Well, and some of this is just like some guys are going to give you more offense. If it's who do I trust to lock somebody down late in the game? Okay, Josh Okogie, you're going to get some minutes at the end of a game defensively. But one of the bigger questions here is what happens with Jarrett Culver, and you know, how I'm sure they were dangling him in trade discussions, but the problem there is he couldn't really shoot when he came into the league, and now they're like working with his jump shot mechanics and. That's a fairly common thing. You get to the NBA and they fix a busted jump shot, but it's also really hard to justify a first-round pick that can't shoot anymore at that position in 2020.
He's got a new shot. Don't forget, he's revamped his shot, okay?
Yeah. So there's a lot of potential here. There's a lot of different guys that you could interchange and create different lineups based on your opponent, too. And there's going to be some games where, like, Ed Davis will not see the floor. If the Lakers are in town and they've got Anthony Davis, and they've got, I'm trying to think of, like, Dwight Howard is gone, but they've got a couple bigs in their lineup, right?
Dwight.
Then Ed Davis probably gets some run.
Okay.
But if you're playing, like, the Miami Heat at the end of the year last year, the Miami Heat were running out one of the smallest lineups in the league, and, like, Jimmy Butler was playing the four on defense
sometimes. Houston did, yeah.
Yep, in Houston. Those are games where Ed Davis just, like, might not play, or he might play 5 minutes.
And the problem is, if he doesn't play, then I don't know that he can carry the weight to hold a guy like Kat responsible.
No, he'll play throughout the season. I'm saying there's going to be games where he doesn't play. He'll play enough in the season
to do it, okay.
To hold accountability. Yeah.
I just had an epiphany as you were talking about Flip that hit me. And this comparison would never be made because the people's personalities were so different. Flip and Zim basically are the same guy in approach, largely.
Very different personalities.
Very different personalities. But think about the approach and think about, because they're both good, right? Or Flip was good. Like, Flip could coach and Zim can coach. But when you think about the fundamental philosophy of what they wanted to do, it's very similar. It's very similar in the sense that it, you questioned if it was up to date enough to consistently win.
And it was.
Like Zim would shoot long twos.
Yeah, and Flip, that was going to be the biggest thing, you know, before Flip tragically passed away, is how much can he evolve? And his offenses, when they were clicking 20 years ago, were always very much move the ball. A lot of principles that can be used today, move the ball around, jump shot centric offense, and a big man who can play sometimes even ball handler and can, and a lot of those Flip lineups too, like the 2, 3, and 4 guys, so KG, Trenton Hassel, Latrell Sprewell, like you could switch off pick and roll defensively. So a lot of Flip principles do translate, but yeah, long twos.
But like, you think about how both of those guys design things to win, and then where the league's evolved to, and you're like, I don't know that this still works, but it doesn't make you a bad coach.
Sure.
And they were both in their own way. They could both become very defensive about how they did things. Like Flip and the long two, Flip would get defensive. Like, he did not like to be questioned. And I think people were like, yeah, Flip, but the game's changed. And he's like, but this still works.
And by the way, sometimes people take that too far. I mean, if you have open long twos and you have, and you knock them down at like a 45-50% clip, I mean, Kevin Durant, go look at his shot chart. Kevin Durant makes long twos with hands in his face at like a 48% clip or something. He should take long twos. He should probably take more threes and get to the rim.
Sure.
So I do think, and maybe the Wolves fall into this category, that if, like, Carmelo Anthony joined the Rockets 2 years ago and spotted up in an early season game from 18 feet wide open and knocked it down and then put his hand up to his mouth like, oh, and looked at his bench and said, I'm sorry, after knocking down a wide open 18-footer. So sometimes we take it too far. If you're wide open from 18 feet and you can knock that shot down, take it. If you're Ricky Rubio and you're not so great from, you know, mid-range, you should probably not shoot that
Change
ball.
That shot.
Change your face. So, all right. So, exciting weekend for the Timberwolves. We're going to pause quick and come back with things we learned on NFL Sunday. Mackie and Judd.
Come on! Football!
Football.
Football!
Football, yeah! Yeah!
Football!
Yeah! Football!
Yeah! Get some!
You think you like football? John Gruden doesn't just like football. He loves football.
You run right by his ass. Scare him to death. Ho, 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 ho. Santa Claus is here. Huddle up.
Football.
Football.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blue town.
Football.
Yeah.
Gotta eat.
Terrifying. That was terrifying. John Gruden. Gentlemen, things we learned on NFL Sunday. Let's make a couple trips around the room here. Outside of the Vikings debacle late in that Dallas game. Judd Zolgad.
All right. I learned this. The Dolphins, in deciding during a 20-13 loss to the Broncos, and I've been a fan of where the Dolphins are going, but by deciding to bench Tua during the course of this game to put in Fitz Magic, they are trying to serve two agendas: winning and development. And I don't like it. If Tua is your guy, he is your guy, and unless he gets hurt, he should play. I really just question this, because so basically you're saying we trust you, we don't trust you now, and then make it very clear post game, but you're still our starter. This is sideways to me, and I think if you're the Dolphins and you are intent on making Tua your starter and developing him, then he is your quarterback, and basically saying, but we're going to put in a fossil now because we trust him more, is a very weird message that I don't think is productive to the ultimate development of Tua.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. I would, if you're just in development mode, wouldn't you want to see how he reacts in a game in which he's kind of getting beat up and he's not playing really well, but you know what? You still have a chance at the end.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what happens? Classic Ryan Fitzpatrick ending.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. Yeah.
I'd like to have seen that play
out. What good did that do them?
It's tough when you're playing my guy Drew Lock and the Denver Broncos. You know, you got to watch out for Drew Lock.
Drew Lock.
Gritty team. Now, the Dolphins, I think they did say that Tua is still the starter.
No, that's the point,
week,
though. So. Like, if he's your starter, he's your starter. Just stick with your starter.
Football.
All right, I learned that Aaron Rodgers is not that clutch. So this is a great stat from Rob Domofsky of ESPN. Aaron Rodgers in overtime in his career.
Oh, my God.
2-8-1 record.
Interesting.
He's attempted only 17 passes in those games. He has lost 4 times without touching the ball and 3 times on overtime turnovers, 2 by him with winning points coming off said turnover. Ooh. So some of that's a little bad luck. I get that he didn't touch the ball.
Let's take the 8 games in which, or the 4 games he didn't touch the ball. He's still 2-4-1.
Yeah. So right? I mean, that means he has only won two of those games. So sorry, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I love you. I do love Aaron Rodgers. I'm a big fan of him.
He's a front runner.
But brother, your team blew a lead and you could have won.
You know Brett Favre, baby. You know Brett Favre.
There's no Brett Favre.
Nope.
Football.
I learned that the Raiders are much more of a legitimate contender than we think in the AFC. I think we've all kind of looked at the Raiders and John Gruden's just being Chucky the last couple of years, and Derek Carr is just kind of a fake franchise quarterback, right? But they've given the Chiefs a couple of runs this year. They beat the Chiefs once, right? And then yesterday, it took a Pat Mahomes classic drive down the field late in that game. Funny, when you're down by 3 points late in the game with a minute and a half and a timeout.
It's not allowed. What happened there was not allowed. It broke NFL rules.
You do have permission to go down the field quickly and confidently and score points. Just going to throw that out there. And by the way, the star pass catchers have permission to not drop key passes, too, just to spread the blame around. But yeah, I almost feel like when we think about the AFC, you know, it's Chiefs, and we're thinking about the Steelers, and, you know, the Ravens have been top of mind, even though they haven't been the same team as last year. And then maybe we get to the Raiders at some point, but we should probably get to the Raiders quicker in that discussion, because if they're doing this with the Chiefs in the regular season, then maybe they can make a run in January.
Football.
I learned that the Cleveland Browns are going to make the playoffs, and Kevin Stefanski might very well be the National Football League's coach of the year in doing what is near miraculous, which is to take this franchise, which has been awful for how long and has had coach after coach fired. But you know what? The Browns might not be perfect, and Baker is certainly flawed at times. But if I'm not mistaken, in beating the Eagles on Sunday, it was their, 7th win? The Cleveland Browns are going to the playoffs, and that for this franchise is definitely saying something.
I just feel like, they're 7-3, and they deserve credit and all those things, but it feels like such a fake 7-3 record.
Yeah, but I mean, they're beating up, but you know what? They're beating the teams that they probably should, and in 2020, you get credit for that, I think.
And you know what, Stefanski, the bar is very, very low for Brown's success, but he has surpassed it more than basically any coach since Bill Belichick.
The sad statement is they look competent, and that's not usual.
Yeah, it is weird. It really is like 25 years since they've looked like this at all. So
football. Next.
Yeah, how in the hell did the Detroit Lions win 4 games this season? They got embarrassed by it. Look, and PJ Walker's a cool story. I know my guy Teddy was out, but you didn't score a single point against Carolina. I know I made the write that down call that I thought Nagy was going to be fired by Patricia. We haven't heard anything that Patricia's being fired as we record this on Monday morning.
They play Thursday. That's why he can't be fired. He should be fired.
So he's probably on borrowed time here, and it wouldn't be surprising by this time next week when we record things around the NFL that he's gone. But Detroit lays an absolute egg, and they're still handing the ball off to Adrian Peterson. I do feel bad for Stafford.
My God.
I love me some Matt Stafford.
Let's check on Adrian here.
You didn't see yesterday's stats?
7 carries.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
18 yards.
Oh, man.
2.6 yards per attempt.
Dude, Adrian.
Just go away.
It's bad. I do feel bad for Stafford. But the Detroit Lions are pitiful. Matt Patricia somehow weaseled his way into 4 wins and weaseled his way into this season as the head coach, and I don't think it's going to last much longer.
Yeah, Adrian on the season now, oh, man. He has run the ball 104 times this season.
Of course he has.
For 389 yards, so 3.5 yards per carry. He's got the 2 touchdowns. Yeah. And it's also, if he's going to keep playing, You can't play for Washington and Detroit. He needs to play for a good. He needs to get like six carries on a good team.
Yeah.
Goal line back.
But no one's going to reserve space for him on a good team, right? Like Frank Gore's with the Jets and Adrian's with the Lions, and guys, just it's over.
They're both chasing the same records too.
But it's okay for it to be done before you're just not going to get there.
They're chasing the same records. All right. Last thing. I don't know if you guys saw. Probably did. I learned that the Titans own the Ravens. After yesterday's escapades,
yeah.
So the Titans came out. They all gathered on the Ravens logo at the 50-yard line and did a little dance. And we're basically just like before the game. I think it was before the game started, right?
Yeah, so they
were chirping at the Ravens from across the field. And the Ravens players came walking up, and John Harbaugh was at the front of the line. And there were Titans players MFing John Harbaugh and company before the game started. Mike Vrabel loves this stuff too. You can just tell he's encouraging this, I'm sure. And then eventually the game plays out, and the Titans get the game-winning touchdown run by Derrick Henry, and they celebrate, and John Harbaugh blows off the handshake. They did walk up to each other at midfield, and Vrabel went, you know, put her in the old vice, stuck the hand out, and John Harbaugh dismisses it and said something, but they both had their masks on, so we couldn't tell what they were saying. But John Harbaugh, not very happy, and it just kind of feels like, you know, the Ravens have been kind of the tough guy team in the AFC, but it almost feels like Mike Vrabel has molded the Titans into that sort of hard-nosed, tough guy
kick-ass team
you don't want to see right in the playoffs.
Absolutely.
And the Vikings almost beat that team, which is room for optimism, I guess. They only lost by one in that game.
Football.
Yeah. Those are things we learned in the NFL on Sunday. Anything else before we wrap
this up? Is Taysom Hill a legit guy to start for the Saints for the rest of the season, potentially? And here's the second point. Can he stay healthy playing the style that he's going to need to play to win?
Well, apparently the big controversy over the weekend is that he still has tight end eligibility in fantasy football.
So people were starting him at tight end, and they had
like quarterback stats and running back stats, basically, because he scored two rushing touchdowns.
That's a flaw in the system.
At tight end.
It is.
Wait, you shouldn't be able to start a guy at a position in which he's not going to start that week, should you?
Yeah, I don't know. But he was eligible at tight end because he's played both.
But I'm saying I think we need to close up that loophole potentially.
Yeah, well.
Well, maybe how do you play fantasy football?
How do you know what, you know,
I don't,
these coaches are so secretive.
Yeah.
You know, who knew what he was going to play until the game started? He was in disguise all week.
Major vote of confidence for Jameis Winston, right?
Yeah, God.
Hey, Jameis, we're going to start a guy who's got tight end eligibility and fantasy above you.
Yeah, he's a gimmick player who's thrown like four career passes.
Yes.
So all of them out of trick plays.
That's all I got.
All right, that's a wrap on Mackie and Judd here. Purple Daily Viking statements today, so be sure to check that out on Apple, Spotify, and ScoreNorth.com. And our two YouTube channels, YouTube.com/ScoreNorthMN. Thank you guys for helping us get up to 1,700 subscribers. And we're hoping to get to 2,000 by the end of the year. And then YouTube.com/Purple Daily Podcast for all Vikings discussions. See you guys.